This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
Good Wednesday to you of this holiday week. It'll seem like Friday to many of us as we head into this holiday, and there'll be sizzling grills and in some driveways and backyards sizzling fireworks. Be careful of that as we head into this 4th of July with temperatures set to climb to triple digits across the west and southern U.S. on Independence Day. Millions under heat alerts. Make sure to stay cool, and you know me and hydration with Absopure. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. The right thing to do, you'll feel better, and frankly, it's the healthful thing to do when we get into heat waves. Hope all is well, underway. More changes with the team as Mike Parsons is on vacation. Hope he's having a good one. Brian Morton is in today. Brian, are you there?
I am right here.
Ah, excellent. Nice to have you. I'm sorry?
I said I live here, Paul.
Yes, you do. You are there 7 days a week at all hours.
Right out of my check. It's really nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone's working harder, but you've always worked harder. You've always had several jobs, and we appreciate the good work that you do. Danielle Mason pressing all the buttons. I checked in with her earlier, so I know she's there. And Rich Luzinski keeping an eye on traffic and weather for us. We've got a lot to talk about today, some safety issues in boating and with those fireworks, and we'll do that. The auto companies doing their reports, I think both GM and Ford did well. I don't have either of the figures in front of me, but they had some increases, which is good. Not so good from what I understand as Stellantis. I haven't seen the figures. Have you, Brian? I haven't seen the Stellantis figures.
No, I haven't.
But we have a story today coming up right away with Paul Eisenstein about how they're investing in air taxis and the air taxi company. That's full steam ahead on that, but that's underneath a headline in the Detroit News that's temporary layoffs hit two Stellantis plants. Automaker realigning production with sales slower than expected. Tesla sales have fallen again, despite price cuts. We'll get into all of that with Paul Eisenstein coming up shortly. I'm going to ask Danielle and Brian, if Rich is nearby, near a microphone with all the work he's running around doing, anyone else here besides me watching the television show The Bear?
I'm on season one.
Anybody?
Danielle's watching it. She's trying to talk to you, but I think somebody reconfigured her microphone for her.
I wondered why.
Have seen it.
I mean, didn't mean to bring you guys to dead silence.
Yeah.
Well, I've only seen season one, so that's it. It frustrates me, that show.
It frustrates you? Tell me.
It frustrates me mostly because I've been in that situation. I've worked in a restaurant, so I know what they're going through.
Yeah.
And it kind of brings back like haunting memories from when I was like working full time there and all of the hustle and bustle. So like I feel it in my chest. Sometimes when the episode's over, I feel like I can breathe again.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thought because it does seem to capture. I worked in a restaurant when it was in a Holiday Inn, and I had other jobs, and I would go into the restaurant. I wasn't under the gun like the servers and the chefs. But it does capture the pressure that while we're out in the dining room, hopefully having a wonderful time, the people back in the kitchen are suffering.
Mm-hmm. We're doing stuff back there.
You are really doing stuff back there. Well, this I took from the weekend section of the Detroit News on June 29th because I just thought it was interesting. Learn culinary lingo in The Bear. It's a very popular show. And and season three has begun, so we just started watching season three. But man, is it's very well cast, very well acted, very few big stars of any to note or mention, and they're doing a great job. So you watch it, but it gives you angina. It gives you angina. Makes your heart flutter more than you want it to.
Yes,
but you'll still watch it.
Well, yeah, I still watch it. My roommate feels the same way. Like, there are times where we're holding our breath.
Really?
Yeah.
So, that means they've done a heck of a job capturing the reality of what it's like to work in a high-pressure kitchen. I hate to bring this up, but we do know that chefs have a higher rate of suicide than the national average of suicide. Mm-hmm. Chefs! Do you remember hearing that before?
I heard it before.
Yeah.
I would have imagined it would have been a higher rate of homicide, knowing the chefs I've known.
Yeah, they do have the knife in their hand, yes. Don't they? You're right about that. But it just talks about the pressure. I mean, it speaks to, I guess, the pressure. Speaking of pressure, President Joe Biden is under a lot of pressure, and I think he even knows it. He is expected to meet with Democrat governors and congressional leaders today, if he hasn't already, as there's a lot of pressure building for him to defend his mental fitness for office. It'll be fascinating to see how these governors walk away from this meeting, Zoom and otherwise, this meeting with the president, if they'll say, oh, I'm completely relieved. I have a feeling that there'll be some, maybe more, that will say that didn't really alleviate our fears for him continuing to fight for the next 4 years, let alone, frankly, I mean, come on, what about finishing this one, finishing this term? The guy who was at the debate, who didn't have a bad debate night, take away the debate, he just had a bad night, but how many of those does he have? I fear, going back to even February, where he had problems putting his thoughts together, and before that. So this is going to be a tough situation. And, of course, we're already hearing from some black women who have spoken up that they basically are saying you better not throw the first black female vice president under the bus. You better not throw Vice President Kamala Harris under the bus, as they put it, for some white guy. And let's face it. What a mistake they made by just trying to check off a couple of boxes. The party picked Kamala because she was a, quote, a woman of color, rather than choosing a very well-qualified person who happened to be a woman of color, because there were lots of them available. Why would they choose someone that they themselves now are turning their back on, saying that she couldn't possibly take over for Joe Biden? What the heck is going on there? What does that tell you about what I called a racist move back when they had to have Kamala Harris? I don't know why no one else sees that. Well, this happens far too often. There's a crowd crush at a religious gathering in northern India that killed more than 120 people and injured dozens others. Listen to this horrible story. Many of the scores killed had fallen into an open sewer near a large prayer meeting. This is, unfortunately, crowd crushes at religious gatherings in India are not uncommon. And deadly incidents have made headlines in the past that we've talked about. It highlights a lack of adequate crowd control and safety measures in the region, and it's always tied into some kind of religious gathering. Very unfortunate indeed. Well, there's an awful lot to talk about as we many are hitting the road right now for the holidays. Just to know that the Michigan State Police wants us to know they will be out in great numbers. They don't get the holiday off. They work harder during the holiday. And they're going to try to keep you alive. So help them by wearing your seatbelt, not fooling around with your phone or anything else while you're driving, and try to go close to the speed limit. Certainly don't ever even consider drinking and driving. We continue with Paul Eisenstein, the automotive journalist extraordinaire, coming up in just a moment here. It's Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Well, I see Brianna Noble of the Detroit News with the headline, Ford manages Q2 sales increase on trucks, EVs, and hybrids. Congratulations to all of the hardworking men and women of Ford Motor Company and their leaders, Jim Farley, Bill Ford. There was also good news for General Motors. Congratulations to all those hard workers, including Mary Barra and Mark Royce. I'm not sure if the Stellantis numbers are out, but Stellantis is all over the news. It's not always the best of news. Here's one headline. Temporary layoffs hit two Stellantis plants. That's not a good headline, but I haven't heard the numbers. But the guy who knows this stuff in his sleep, Paul Eisenstein, automotive journalist extraordinaire. And he's here to talk to us about the investment Stellantis has that has, it's up in the air. It's got nothing to do with their cars on the road. It's the freedom of travel everywhere and every way, including in the air. Paul, I don't know. Are they spreading out at a time when maybe they should be paying a little closer attention to how things are going in the auto business?
Well, they're two very different businesses. And by the way, let me fill you in. They did have a low double-digit decline during the second quarter of the year, that on top of not having a very good first quarter either. You may recall that Carlos Tavares, the CEO of Stellantis, recently acknowledged that he was a little arrogant. That's his word, not mine, arrogant, for missing some of the things that actually hurt the company's sales in North America. And yes, that has led them to have to delay operations and do some layoffs at a few of the plants here in the Metro Detroit area, Warren Truck and down in Toledo. But should they not be focusing on the other business? No, I think they're doing the right thing. And for people who really aren't familiar with this, what they're doing is they're investing another $55 million in a company called Archer that is developing, well, you could call them flying cabs.
And that's combined with last year's $110 million investment.
Right.
And so you throw in this additional $55 million just announced for what will be, for all intents and purposes, an air taxi service, and not just an air taxi service, but an electric air taxi service.
Yeah, everybody is going electric. And the important point, we've been following this fairly heavily on my website, headlight.news. And in fact, I have a story that will be going up. I'll probably put it up sometime this holiday from a gentleman by the name of Tim Jackson, who's been writing essentially just put out a book. Some of you're going to need to get on the air sometime soon. About all the efforts that are going into these new flying, in some cases flying cars, in some cases flying cabs. There's a difference because there are a couple manufacturers that are actually developing craft that you can fly as an airplane and then drive on the road. A lot of others, including the stuff that Archer is developing, and Joby, a company that is partnered with Toyota, and there's a few others partnering with automakers. These really are designed simply to fly from point A to point B. They're not road-worthy vehicles. You can't drive them. And Archer seems to be one of the more advanced companies. They've actually done what is critical. They've done what's called transition flying. In other words, they take off almost like a helicopter. And at one point, they then start flying forward more like an airplane. Then when they reach their destination, they transition again, and they land vertically. And that, as you may know, is an extraordinarily difficult task. The military's tried to do it with the Osprey, and they've had a lot of crashes.
Well, they've failed miserably. The Osprey is a failed craft that's being held together by congresspeople who get big money for their districts to keep it going. I mean, we had a guy back when I was in Philadelphia, went to jail for the behind-the-scenes shenanigans that were happening with Osprey, and yet it still flies today. Please don't tell me that these guys are building a car like that.
No, they're very, very different technologies. I've been following it quite extensively. It appears that the way they're doing this is much, much different. And one of the things that they're doing is all of these are very much drone-like. First of all, they use electric motors, which are much simpler. They really work for aircraft. And you have multiple rotors. In some cases, some of these craft have as many as 12. I think one even has 16 individual rotors, so that if you had a failure of one, even in some cases several different rotors simultaneously, you'd still be able to continue flying and, more importantly, landing.
Yes, that becomes very important, doesn't it?
Hey, yeah, it does. And by the way,
go ahead.
You're going to see this. I absolutely believe this is going to happen. These craft are largely aimed at regional markets. So, for example, maybe from Detroit Metro, you'd be able to take that and go up to a little place up in Troy or even Lansing or someplace else, you know, anywhere from, you know, 15 to 150 miles. They would replace the helicopters that you see in a number of cities. New York City is a great example.
Right.
And it's interesting that you have so many automakers getting into it. Many of them are partnered, like Stellantis and Archer or Toyota and Joby. Hyundai has actually started its own company. I saw the craft that they're developing. It hasn't flown yet, but I saw it out at the Consumer Electronics Show in January. It's pretty impressive. This technology is real. It's not pie in the sky. Will we have flying cars that you and I can buy? Maybe. Will we have these drone-like robocabs, some using pilots, some designed to fly without a pilot? Yeah, that stuff's real.
Well, it's, you know, we keep going back to the Jetsons, and they were predicting this a long, long time ago. We kind of thought it would happen by now because so many other things have. But I have to tell you, the first CEO in the last 50 years that I have not met at one of the auto companies is Carlos Tavares. Never met him. Don't know when he's around. I get the impression he's not around as much as the other guys because he's running companies in other countries. And I always thought he was very good, and I thought he was very tough. Now I'm questioning some of these things. The only news stories we ever get about him is like when he got paid $39 million or whatever. And I don't know about all the rest of this. And look, on the front page of a newspaper, when the dealers say they're not being provided with vehicles that meet the standards of the vehicles they're trying to beat out, that's a frightening headline.
Yeah, it is. And I think that Tavares is going to have to make some real changes here in the U.S. operation, the U.S. side of the company. He is an impressive man. I won't mention who, but I can tell you the CEO of one of the other Detroit manufacturers that doesn't wear a skirt once called him a few years ago the single best CEO in the industry.
Kind of narrows it down, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And I think you'll find I have heard him called the best by other CEOs around the industry.
I thought that Mr. Fain was going to run into a brick wall when he ran into Carlos Tavares, and that's not what happened. However, I didn't think of the other strategy, which Tavares followed. They went along with everything, and now they're just cutting jobs, moving more people to Mexico and to other places, China, and and he wants to get the hell out of Dodge. They may not even be in Detroit, for all we know, 5 years from now.
They will be, and the focus will be largely based on larger truck products, whether they be their big SUVs or their pickup trucks. You're going to see less and less of a U.S. focus, certainly in engineering and design, here in this country on the smaller vehicles, and a heavier emphasis on using technology brought in from their European brands like Citroën and PSA and the like. And of course, you'll continue to see an emphasis on some of the European, the Italian brands like Fiat and Alfa Romeo. One thing that speaks highly of Carlos, remember how long GM suffered losing ultimately billions of dollars on the Opel and Vauxhall brands. It finally sold them off. Carlos had those two brands back in the black within less than 2 years.
Yep, that was a big deal. That's for sure. Hey, did you say headlight.news for that column, that article?
Yeah, we have one up. If you search for robo taxis, you'll find a piece that we had up already. I'm going to be putting up a piece on Archer in a couple of hours. I've been out on assignment today, but it will be up later. And the gentleman I mentioned to you, Tim Jackson, who you'll definitely want to get on the show, he is giving me an excerpt of his book, and I will have that on the site by the beginning of next week.
Beautiful. Paul Eisenstein, very happy 4th of July holiday to you.
And to you as well, and to all the listeners.
Paul Eisenstein, here in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. A few years ago, I think it must have been during the pandemic or around the pandemic. These things kind of blaze by me, and I try to catch up with them. But I was asked by our old friend and former colleague here at WJR, Tim High, who now is in charge of public relations, et cetera, for Mackinac Island. And he's got a great job, and he does a great job, Tim High and his team. And he said, would you like to be a part of the stone-skipping contest we have and have for over 50 years on the island? I said, well, what do you want me to do? Well, could you join the true Hall of Fame announcer, stone-skipping Hall of Fame announcer, Eric the Voice Steiner, and help out? And I thought, well, as long as I don't get in his way, I don't know anything officially. I mean, we've all skipped stones, but I didn't know that much about it officially. And it's quite an event, and it's coming up again. The Mackinac Island Stone Skipping Tournament, celebrating 56 years now of tradition with the one and only, the only one I know, who's in the Stone Skipping Hall of Fame, the great announcer Eric the Voice Steiner is on the other end of my line. How are you, Eric?
Hey, Paul W., thanks for having me on your show. And wait, there are two Hall of Fame announcers on your show right now because you and I both got inducted into the Stone Skipping Hall of Fame. And I owe it to you for that ESPN because you made me look like a star. I have to say,
because I was doing such a bad job.
No, because you and I, if it wasn't for you, I would never got inducted. And that's what they told me when last year when they said it. They said, Paul W. made you look great. And so it's all because of you.
Well, I was happy.
I got inducted.
I was happy to be
doing it 25 years.
Well, you've been doing it 25 years?
This is my 25th year announcing the competition.
Wow. All right. Well, I was happy to assist you in any way that I could. I didn't know what I was doing, but we had great fun. And some people would call it in the old days, we were ham and egging it. You know, we fit together well, ham and egging it. And it turned out to be great. And frankly, it's one of the best things that ever happened because of COVID for me and probably for you, too. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. I know where you're going with this.
Well, because nothing else was happening on ESPN, the Ocho, though the quality wasn't always as good as I hoped it would be, but they ran our segment for stone skipping a billion times because they didn't have any other sports to feature.
It was the right time and the right place for you and I to do that. Because, like you said, they had nothing. And if you remember, John Oliver from HBO picked up on it and put the two of us with our voices on one of his segments on HBO.
That's the first time hearing it. I had not even heard that.
Well, if you go to our stoneskipping.com website, you can actually replay that John Oliver when he did it on HBO.
All right, I'm going to look for that. The stoneskipping.com website and look for John Oliver, HBO. Well, that's great. Just another good thing that's come from this wonderful event. Coming up July 4th, what is today? Well, it's tomorrow, July 4th, which is the people, including your son and even yourself, Voice, take this very seriously, this stone skipping competition.
You know, this year we've got all the past Guinness Book record holders. We also have the current Guinness Book record holders. And then we have a gentleman that came in last year. His name is John Jennings. He runs a stone skipping competition in Kentucky. He won it last year. He's coming back to try and retake his title because, you know, if they win stone skipping on Mackinac Island, it's like the the Stanley Cup of stone skipping. It gives them bragging rights for a year.
Wow. And in what position? Your son did very well the year that I was helping out. What? How's he doing?
He won that year. That's the year he won.
He did win. Okay.
Yeah, he won that year. And he was the former Guinness Book Record holder. He had 65 skips.
And did you hear that, folks? 65 skips?
The guy that has the current Guinness Book Record holder has 88 skips. And you want to know the weird thing? His name is Kurt Steiner. No relationship to me. He's out of Pennsylvania, and we are not related at all, but he took the Guinness for my son.
That son of a... Well, listen, 88 skips. Now, if you're like a normal person, like I'm sometimes like a normal person, you wonder how in the world they ever count 88 as it's skipping across the water.
Well, for Guinness, you have to videotape it, and they cannot stand in the water. They have to stand on the beach or the bank, skip the... And it has to be one consecutive motion with a videotape. And then Guinness gets the tape, and they actually slow it down, and they count the skips. And that's how they know when they certify they skip for the record.
So when we're there at the event itself along the shore there on Mackinac Island, July 4th, tomorrow, for this Mackinac Island Stone Skipping Tournament celebrating 56 years of tradition, the gentleman on the line with me right now, the voice, Eric, the voice Steiner, in the Stone Skipping Hall of Fame, apparently with me as well, has been doing this for 25 years. Are you going to have some kind of a special celebration tomorrow?
Not for me, but for the skippers we will. But I'll just be there in the background doing the call and the play-by-play. And one other thing, Paul, if you want to see the replay, if you're ever talking to anybody and want to see that ESPN where you and I did it,
yeah,
stoneskipping.com, you can actually see that video replay also. It's tied into that.
No kidding. Well, this is great. I didn't know any of this. Eric and I send little texts from time to time to each other. We stay in touch. He's a wonderful guy, great family. And you spend more time now in Florida, don't you?
Yeah, I live in Sarasota, Florida. We flew up Saturday. I'm here for the week, and we fly back to Sarasota on Sunday.
Well, just have a wonderful time tomorrow. I know it will be. Do you get a chance to ever offer some of these skippers some of your expertise to tell them what they should or shouldn't do? What would be the best advice you'd give to a stone skipper?
Talk to the pros, not me, because I can't skip a stone to save my life. I'm horrible at it.
I didn't remember that. I thought you were good at it.
Not me. I can only just do the play-by-play. That's why they keep me around. Tim High gets a hold of me every year and says, okay, we got to do it again this year. And I'm like, oh, man, okay. But
well,
yeah, it's been fun. It's been great. But I've got something for all your listeners to where if they want any stone skipping merchandise, like the shirts or anything, the cool shirts we have, if they go to stoneskipping.com, now this is just for your listeners. We can't tell anybody else. Check out, if they use the word Stone24, they get a discount.
Stone24, if you go to stoneskipping.com and all the merchandise, all the goodies for stone skipping, you're going to get a discount. Stone24 is what you're supposed to mention. Beautiful. Thanks for that insight.
They get the official shirt they can get. It's funny because I wear the shirt around Florida and people would stop me and say, is this a real sport? Is this for real? And it's like, oh, yeah, this is a real thing.
Very real. It's taken very seriously. And I wish ESPN would come back, Ocho, or any one of the 47 ESPN channels they have now. I wish they would come back and broadcast it again, but it sure was a nice ride. And you're doing a great job, and I appreciate it. You have fun. What can we tell anyone who's driving up today or tomorrow? Where should they go? What should they do?
Well, when they come over to Mackinac Island, it's on Windermere Point Beach. It starts at 10 a.m. to noon is all the amateurs. If you win the amateur division, you can actually move up into the pro division, and that starts at noon.
Beautiful. Starts at 10 a.m., and it's just a lot of fun. There'll be a lot of people there cheering on their favorite stone skipper. And my favorite stone skipping Hall of Fame announcer, Eric the Voice Steiner. Nice catching up with you, Eric. Best to you and the family. Happy Independence Day.
Thank you, Paul W. I appreciate it. And when you're down in Florida, let me know and Kim and myself and Kathleen will go to dinner.
We will. Absolutely. I'll look forward to that. Thanks much.
Thank you so much, Eric. Paul W.
Take care. It's a lot of fun, folks. If you haven't, I mean, all of us have skipped stones one time or another. This is a real stone skipping competition in its 56th year there on Mackinac Island. Tim High doing a great job. Stoneskipping.com, the website. Maybe, I guess you can find our old one that we did together, and some great merchandise and some great fun. Mention Stone 24. And thanks again to Eric, the voice, Steiner, as we continue In Focus with Paul W. on WJR. Hey, you can win a trip. It's easy for me to say. You can win a trip to see the Eagles at Sphere, Las Vegas. I've been dying to see that Sphere, and I love the Eagles, but I'm not eligible for the contest, but you are. The Eagles, an iconic band at an iconic venue. The Eagles live at Sphere, Las Vegas, performing 16 shows this September 20th through December 14th, and you could be there. We've actually got two trips for two with flights. A stay at the Venetian Resort, Las Vegas, dinner at Chica, Las Vegas, two tickets to the show, plus a Vibee VIP experience package. Prizes provided by Live Nation. To enter for your chance to win, text this hour's national keyword, James, to 95819. Text this hour's national keyword, James, to 95819. For full details and official contest rules, visit WJR.com. All right, look, if somebody said to you, hey, you want to go do this? This will be fun. There is a chance you could burn your hands or your fingers. You could ruin your eyes. You could get a fracture or laceration on your hands, loss of fingers, facial injuries, hearing loss. Would you say, yeah, I want to sign up for that? Well, that's what you're signing up for if you don't leave the fireworks to the experts. Here to talk about that, Detroit Fire Department Captain Edward Davis and Lieutenant Antoine Herbert. This 4th of July, tomorrow, all about fireworks, but we need to be safe. And we're going to talk a bit about the safest way to use legal fireworks this holiday, if you must. Captain, welcome into Focus.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And Lieutenant, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So we talk about the barbecues, the parades, and the fireworks. And the National Safety Council advises us all to enjoy fireworks at public displays conducted by professionals and not to use any fireworks at home. But we know, Captain, we can say that till we're blue in the face, and there are going to be people who still are going to do fireworks. They're like a tradition for their family. So what suggestions can you give these people to make sure it's at least as safe as it can be?
So we definitely know that it's a high time for that, and it's a hot topic, pun intended. But because if you drive down any major street, you'll see the tents where the fireworks are for sale. But one thing, just make sure the fireworks are legal in your area, or if you're in the subdivision or any place of residence, that they're legal in your area, and only purchase and set off fireworks that are labeled for consumer and not professional use.
Well, that's a very good point. I never even thought about the idea of people getting a hold of some of those incredible shells that we see the professionals fire off. Those should only be in the hands of professionals.
Right. Keyword should. But like you said, with the internet and other methods, people can get a hold of these things, and they can become quite dangerous. But outside of those professional use, one thing we like to mention, because they're really common and you can get them in a variety of areas, those sparklers that we usually give to our children because we think they're safe, those are some of the most dangerous fireworks to have. They can burn at temperatures of about 2,000 degrees, which is hot enough to melt some metals, and by carrying them, you have direct access to your skin or clothing. So those can become very dangerous as well.
One of my worst memories, Captain Edward Davis, Detroit Fire Department, talking about safety with fireworks, with that lowly sparkler, I stepped on one barefoot when I was a kid that we, you know, it burned out and somebody dropped it to the ground and I stepped on it. man, it was still very, very hot. Sparklers and anything that ignites can do great damage, which is why, Lieutenant Antoine Herbert, we say, never allow young children to handle those fireworks.
Right, never. So it's also important to remember to never use or light fireworks while using alcohol or drugs. If you are going to use them, it's important to keep a bucket of water handy in case any fire or mishap happens, they tip over, things of that nature.
I saw...
With the barbecue, the picnics going on, you have your beer and you're celebrating. So you have to be very careful because around dusk, you might have been hitting back a couple and then your judgment may lapse and you do some things you normally wouldn't do. You know, hey, hold my beer, you know, while I light this, and then things can go awry very quickly.
Never hold lighted fireworks in your hands. Never light them indoors. Only use them away from people, houses, and flammable material. I saw a piece on probably Instagram, it's mostly what I see, of a family letting off fireworks, but they kept the stash of all of the fireworks they were going to light off one by one real close to the fireworks they were lighting. And sure enough, the fireworks shot over to the stash, and then the stash caught on fire. And the explosions, I don't know what happened to the people, but it was ugly. And it can happen to you if you're not careful.
Correct. That's what, like you stated in your opening statement, with those still being hot and they go into a dry area. We've been blessed with a lot of rain this past season, but some areas where it's the grass is dry and they fall, they can smolder for up to 2 to 3 hours. Mm. So you may think it's over and you go inside, and then you have that incident going on, and you don't know about it.
Which is why you recommend, as we have Lieutenant Antoine Herbert and Captain Edward Davis of our fabulous Detroit Fire Department, that you shouldn't ever try to relight or handle malfunctioning fireworks, never ignite them in a container, and soak both spent and unused fireworks in water for a few hours before you discard them. You have a responsibility. Once you buy those fireworks and they're in your possession, you do have a responsibility for them all the way.
Correct. Those, like I said, some of those larger fireworks, the wick can be down low in between the paper or plastic, and you may think it's out and you just wet it down with the water hose, but it's best to submerge them in water to really get, like you said, for a few hours to make sure, especially prior to throwing them away, because they may just, oh, they're good. And in the morning, you know, you sometimes come out after you see a big pile of spent fireworks in the street, and then they'll just discard them in the trash. They may still be hot and burn that trash can and get going. So you definitely have to use the utmost care and safety when handling fireworks.
Well, you have to be so careful. And I know people feel, well, hey, I've done this for years. My dad did it before me. He taught me how, all of that. If you've ever watched, as I have for our Ford fireworks, I've watched the guys get ready. These guys do this for a living and they do it hundreds of times a year. But they are so careful at all times because they know they're literally playing with fire and bombs. And so you have to be careful. No matter how many times you've done it, you have to make sure you keep the kids away, that there's an adult supervising all fireworks activities, including sparklers. You should light fireworks one at a time and back away immediately. Don't hold them till the last second like you're a hero and then throw them. And the worst part, you've already touched on it, both Lieutenant Antoine Herbert and Detroit Fire Department Captain Edward Davis, when I see somebody approaching a firework that hasn't gone off properly, when I see them approaching it to relight it, if I could tackle them and keep them away from doing that, I would.
Right. You may have to. You can make the next Instagram video if you do that, sir.
Yeah, well, I don't want
to. One other thing, which I did find on Instagram, pets. Sometimes dogs will get excited, and they'll go after the sparklers or the light. So not only children being aware of where your children are, but having pets around that may chase after the fireworks or go towards the sparklers.
Well, that reminds me to put on my what do they call it, the thunder jacket or something that people have for their dogs. I might have to wear one of those tonight and tomorrow.
Right. Hopefully not.
Gentlemen, thanks for your work day in and day out. We so appreciate what you do, and we want you to stay safe as you help us stay safe. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
From the Detroit Fire Department, Captain Edward Davis, Lieutenant Antoine Herbert, representing all of the hardworking men and women of our Detroit Fire Department as we continue. Happy 4th of July holiday, our Independence Day being celebrated, and that means for many people, get out on the road in their cars, many more than usual. It means head to the airport if you haven't already. It means get out on the water, go to the cottage, whatever it might be. We just hope that you will do it as safely as you possibly can. And you should know on the roadways, at least, our fine Michigan State Police will be out in numbers to make sure that no mistakes are being made. No one's drinking and driving. No one's speeding or driving recklessly. They're out there to make sure as many people can be safe as possible. And we thank all of those people, rescue people, workers, road repair people, firemen, police officers, sheriff deputies, the list goes on and on. We thank them for working. They'd like to be with their families too, but they're working for us, and we will never forget that. Hope you can stream us. Well, you can if you want, if you'd like. Stream us at WJR.com. Also the WJR app, and for podcasts. If you can't be here for lunch with us, which is a nice way to spend lunch from noon to two, if you can't be here for lunch with us, then pick us up on the podcast when it's convenient for you. We've got the team, all familiar people. Brian Morton is here in for Mike Parsons, as Danielle Mason is running all the equipment. Rich Luzinski, WJR traffic and weather first. And now we have from the New York Times that President Biden told an ally that he is weighing whether to continue in the race. This top advisor to Mr. Biden speaking on the condition of anonymity to discuss the situation. And it was said that the president is well aware of the challenges he faces. Interesting. He cannot serve another term. I don't say that out of malice. I don't say that based on party. It doesn't give me pleasure to see an elderly man in his failing stages. And it is even worse when I believe he could be, should be, should have been protected by his family, who see being the son, brother, wife of a president much more valuable than letting him bow out with dignity. Because whether you like him or not, he's had a very long, distinguished career. I remember interviewing him over the years. He was always a great interview. You always got kind of a kick out of him. He had his problems. He plagiarized. He exaggerated. He misremembers things. He's done all of that, but he's been accepted, and he became elected President of the United States of America. But that was then, and this is now. And what we saw at that so-called debate is where he is. Heck, you can see video of him being like that for months, if not years. And people would say, wow, they're playing around with the video. No, no one's playing around with the video. You saw it the way it happened. And it's got nothing to do with him having a bad debate night. Come on, President Obama, give me a break on that. It's where he is today, whether it's every day or just once in a while, it's not the frame of mind we want and need a leader of the free world to be in, because there are lots of enemies who would love to take advantage of us and will the moment they feel they have a chance. There's a story out yesterday approving the FDA approving a new drug to slow the progression of early symptomatic Alzheimer's disease. Still, that is a disease that's been around a very long time that can still put the fear of God in us because there's never been anything that's really helped that we're aware of. But Eli Lilly claims that by helping the body remove amyloid plaque buildup in the brain, which is a hallmark of Alzheimer's, that this new drug, and I'm not sure the pronunciation, donanemab, I don't know, have either of you guys heard how that's pronounced? I'll just say that. It's the latest drug that's gotten some approval. And when you consider the number of people projected to have Alzheimer's is predicted to grow to nearly 14 million by 2060. As of 2023, last year, about 6.7 million Americans, 65 and older, live with Alzheimer's. It's a very tough one. Did you see this story? Maybe we should call our friend Rachel Stewart at Gardner White. Really, Gardner White's a fabulous place to buy your mattresses, your furniture, whatever it might be, for in the house, outside of the house, for office furniture, everything. Gardner White does a great job. Thank you, Rachel Stewart, for all your support all the time. By the way, Rachel Stewart joins us with the 21st annual Paul W. Smith Golf Classic coming up July 29th. You can be a part of it. Hope you'll sign up as a sponsor. We need as many as we can get to help the 55,000 kids every year that we help from the four children's charities that we help. But you can be a part of that by going to paulwsmithgolf.com. paulwsmithgolf.com, and you can see what availabilities there are for sponsorships, and we'd love to have you along. This year, it's at a fabulous country club, one of the best in the country, and that is the Country Club of Detroit, CCD, in Grosse Pointe Farms. And we're very excited to be at what is, if I were a golfer, I would call it my home course. I live across the street from it. I just haven't played in a long time, even though I'm a golf member. But that's another story, a longer story. But the point is this right now, what I would call Rachel Stewart about. But I'm not going to bug her during the holiday here. The Federal Trade Commission has unanimously voted to block mattress maker Tempur Sealy's. I said that right, the way they have it written here. Remember, those used to be two different companies, Tempur-Pedic and Sealy. Well, now it's called Tempur Sealy. And they want to purchase Mattress Firm, but the FTC is blocking this $4 billion merger of mattress giants, saying the proposed deal would give the companies enormous power in the industry. Interesting. I maybe what's funny?
The all the politics behind big mattress.
It was really
they'll have too much control over our mattresses. Like, is there anybody that has control over our mattresses?
It's very funny. Who knew it was even a problem?
Exactly. I bought mattresses. I didn't realize there was so much involved.
Well, you did realize that.
You just lay down on one and go, this is nice, and
yeah. Give it a shot.
That's kind of all I've ever done.
And I think Rachel Stewart at Gardner White, I think they even give you a period of time to take it home and sleep on it.
Yes, they do.
Which is very useful because, let's face it, sleep is so very important. Now that I'm getting a lot more than I did for 40 or 50 years, I see how important it is. And your mattress plays a big role in that.
Yep, and you get that 30-day or whatever it is free, and they say, I don't like this one. Can I get another one? I don't like this one. And you never have to buy a mattress.
That's like, and this conversation came up at dinner the other night with Kim, and that is, if you're at a nice restaurant and you say, I'd like a glass of wine, and they say, what would you like? I'm not sure. They're going to give you two or three tastes of a wine, of different wines. And then she said after tasting the third one, she goes, probably would be bad for me to say, oh, that's good. I'm done. I've had enough wine. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I'll switch to water now. Thank you.
We may never get Woo-hoo. Back to that restaurant, though. So you better not do that. Okay. Do as I say, not as I do. And boy, has that been true for going to see Dr. Saul Kogan. I was a bad boy. I went once, and then I kept telling you about it, and you'd see me out and about struggling to walk. Well, I've gone four times now, and man, has it made a difference, because here's the thing. Like with all medicines, all doctors, you have to go do what you're supposed to do to get better, Paul. I said that to myself. I was yelling at myself just then. And so so that's what I have done. And thank you, Dr. Saul Kogan, for helping me get better. And it's, you know, I'm just going to keep going. It took years for my back to get to this situation with the lower back. So it's going to take a few months maybe to get it completely back. But it's coming completely back without surgery, which is the goal here. All right, lots more to talk about. Our good friend Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard coming up next. Greg Russell, Movie Show Plus. And I never even knew there was such a position, but I like it already. We have a Yale graduate hamburger historian. Now you're talking. We continue in Focus on WJR. All right, here we go. Again, we've been talking about the 4th of July. We're excited about this whole holiday period that begins today for many people. For some, it probably began Monday, but it's beginning for most of us. And most of us, if we're lucky, will have tomorrow and Friday off. But be that as it may, people are going to be out and about. There's going to be more traffic on the roads, in the air, and on the water. And keeping track of most all of that, our fine Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard with Operation Dry Water, putting the Sheriff's Office Marine Unit out in force on county lakes during this holiday period, July 4th, 5th, 6th. And I just wanted to catch up with the sheriff because we send along our thoughts, our prayers, our best wishes. It's been a very rough time, Michael, for you and the men and women of the Oakland County Sheriff's Department.
It has been, yeah, a gut punch on so many levels, my friend. It's just been one thing after another. And the kind of analogy I use is like the boxer that's in the ring and they keep getting pummeled in the face, and the lookers say, how long is that person going to keep standing? But our people do. They keep showing up, doing amazing and great things. I'm so super proud of them. But it has been a tough, tough run.
It has. And believe me, we've all noticed and we've all thought of you and put to all of the men and women you represent in our thoughts and prayers and basically say enough is enough. They've been through so much so far. But on to what is a national awareness and enforcement campaign. I now understand why it's called Operation Dry Water. It's to reduce alcohol and drug-related accidents and fatalities on the water. And that's what right. We're talking about here.
Yep. So it's a program focused on the fourth weekend, and typically a long weekend for many people take that vacation and they get out on the water, which is amazing and great. And in Oakland County, 450 navigable bodies of water. So we have the largest marine division in the state. So we're very busy over the upcoming holiday, but we also want to encourage people, be super safe. Don't make it a holiday that is a reminder of a tragedy rather than a reminder of, oh, we did that last year. It was so much fun. Let's do it again.
Boy, that is a good point. And that goes for everything. And we've already talked about it, but we can't say it enough, unfortunately. And that is, you don't drink and drive a boat or a car. You don't, I would suggest letting the experts handle the fireworks. But if you do, there are a lot of rules you should follow if you're going to do fireworks around your house or cabin.
100%.
And what else? What else should we be reminding people about, Michael?
Well, as you said, don't mix the alcohol or substances with piloting anything, be it a boat or be it an automobile. That's where, you know, inherent danger always is. And even for things that you don't think is dangerous. So, for example, you know, a lot of our drownings that we have in the lake, people aren't piloting the boat. They get hot. It's a hot, sunny day. It's dehydrating you. The alcohol has a magnified impact on your system. You jump in the water for a cool off dip, but your physiological capabilities are vastly diminished because maybe you've drank and consumed too much alcohol and you go under. you don't have the ability to swim, keep yourself where you were or where you need to be, and you drown. And that happens all the time. There's a very high percentage of our drowning victims that have been drinking or have been partaking of substances. And if you want to do that as an adult, you know, do it responsibly. And if you're going to get in the water and you've been drinking, put on a flotation device so that there's no risk. You know, we had 3 drownings in one weekend already this summer.
Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard with friendly warnings for this holiday to be very, very careful. I see in the statistics, Michael, 85% of people who drown in a recreational boating accident were not wearing a life jacket. 85%.
Right. These are preventable things. And a lot of people think, well, I've got my required legal safety equipment on the boat, my PFDs, my personal flotation devices, and all those things. But they're stored under the seat or they're somewhere they're inaccessible. And I liken it to if you're driving through an intersection and a car blows the red and hits you broadside, you're not going to have time to put on your seatbelt. And the same thing is true. If suddenly you end up in some kind of an emergency in the water, somebody strikes your boat, you hit something the wrong way and your boat capsized, whatever it is, and you end up in the water, there's not going to be a moment in time when you can look for that PFD and try to put it on or have it with you. And we've seen a terrible tragedy right here in Oakland County a number of years ago, and it will never leave me, or certainly the family that was impacted. A young man had been tubing. They'd been having a blast. Everything was coiled up in the boat, and the tube caught the wind, and the rope wrapped around the young man's leg and pulled him out of the boat. He hit his head on the way out and drowned. Went under because he just that fast. And so, you know, it's just something that is so tragic, but has the opportunity at least to have a positive outcome if you're in equipment that will prevent you from drowning.
These are all important things that we're glad to be reminding everyone. And I want to say, so that you hear me say it, that we are so thankful to all of the men and women that you represent, Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard, and all the other law enforcement people within the sound of my voice, because they don't have a 4th of July holiday. They have the 4th of July extra work couple of days. They're going to be out there. They'd just as much like to be with their family for a cookout and everything else that the rest of us get to do, but they aren't, and they're keeping us safe. And I just want you to know how much we appreciate that. We never take it for granted.
Well, and I appreciate you and all your listeners for the support they do give, and especially the outpouring of love and prayers, which are super helpful when we lost Deputy Reckling and what his family's going through. And you're right. You know, again, my team has been through incredible amounts, but they're going to be out there in force, protecting parades, because tragically we know, you know, gatherings are targets for some evil people these days. And so we've got a lot of parades to cover, the lake, festivities, fireworks, and just trying to keep the road safe as people come and go in large numbers from friends and family. And that's what we're going to be doing.
Hey, Michael, before I let you go, any more information on those foreign teams of thugs that fly into our country, come in without any problem, and then rob our houses?
No, nothing good. We know that, you know, the intelligence now tells us that other gangs have become active and operating around the country, including Colombian and Venezuelan.
Great. We're being spotted as an easy target.
Yeah, and there's obviously, when the word gets out, you know, at one point we think they were taking almost $1 million a week out of Oakland County. That is not a message that is lost on the criminal.
Yeah. Well, we've got to fix that somehow or another, and I hope that we will. I hope that we can. But as you've always pointed out, keep the doors locked. Turn your alarm system on. If you don't have an alarm system, get one. And ask the person installing the alarm if it's one that can be set up so it can't be jammed by the electronic equipment these thugs are carrying around. I wish 100%. You a fabulous holiday, a safe holiday. Best to you and Pam and the family. And I look forward to seeing you again soon, Michael.
I do as well, Paul. Love you. I love you.
Love you, too. Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard. We are so lucky to have him. He's been around a long while, serving all of us in so many different ways. This is really one of the most important ways as Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard. As we continue in focus with Paul W. Smith right here on WJR. Woohoo!
All right!
Dine in or carry out the best Wiggly's corned beef sandwiches around at Frank's Deli and Grill, 3405 Russell Street in Detroit's Eastern Market. Open every day from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. While you're there, be sure to say hi to Victor. Victor's the owner. Hey, Victor.
Hey, Vic.
He loves his customers as much as the corned beef. All right, were you saying hi to Victor, Greg?
Yep, saying hi to Victor as well.
All right, and you have a nice little tour group with you today.
That's right. Got a family there, the Chapmans, waving to them, and they're waving back at you.
Hi, Chapmans.
Yep, giving them a nice tour of the city of Detroit, and of course had to bring them up here, you know, show them the radio station, and they're enjoying and loving it and also loving the Fisher Building, too.
I was just going to say, it's the golden tower of the Fisher Building. What's not to love?
That's right.
That's right.
There's some great movies out. We're not talking about Beverly Hills Cop Axel F., but I do see from Adam Graham in the Detroit News, he gave it a B, and I'm so glad that he did. I mean, I want to see it. I would want to see it anyway.
Right.
But I was worried. You know what I mean? You know that kind of worry you get?
Oh, yeah, because you still have Beverly Hills Cop 3 on your mind.
Right.
So that, yes, that would scare people.
And I have the jacket on that Axel is wearing. The Lions presented me with that jacket when we carried the Lions. And the first time I walked around with it, people said, oh, that was from Beverly Hills Cop. And I thought, what are they talking about? I didn't even remember. And then when you open it up, it talks about being the Beverly Hills Cop jacket. And I see he's wearing it in the film again with the Beverly Hills Cop Axel F. But I'm glad it got a good grade, if you will.
Yes.
I do see... One that's, I remember it was a lot of fun, and I don't know if it was just because we had littler kids then or whatever, but Despicable Me 4 is out there, and you did see that.
Yeah, this one's got, you know, Steve Carell back, Kristen Wiig, and they've got their three daughters, plus they just welcome in a new member of the family, a son, who is, his main goal is just to torment his dad. Can you believe that, Paul W., a kid who wants to torment his dad?
I can't imagine a son doing that.
But all of a sudden, they are invaded by this other group led by the voice of Will Ferrell and Sofia Vergara, who really want to force them out and take over, as we always say, the world. I think we've got a clip.
Group,
let's listen.
I need a word with you. Your family's lives are at stake.
What?
Maxime Lamal has escaped from prison.
I'm coming for my revenge, Group.
We have to get to the safe house.
It has a vending machine!
Well, that was short and sweet. Who puts this out? Who makes the Despicable series of films?
Universal Pictures.
Okay.
Yep, it is one of theirs, and definitely, like you said, one of their big ones, too, as far as you know, being a moneymaker, because everybody loves the Minions. You know, like...
And I understand there are even more Minions than ever before.
Oh, yeah. There's a million Minions. Try to say that five times.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. And especially for the audience who's meant for the kids love it. So,
but that the parents can sit through it and not go crazy.
Like we always say, there's enough of that adult or grown-up humor that'll make them laugh because they'll get the inside joke.
So how many Wiggly's corned beef sandwiches?
You know what? It's the holiday weekend. Let's be good, and we'll give them four.
Wow. Good for you.
Yep, we'll give them four and a little, like we always say, a little bit more aioli and also a pickle.
Oh, excellent. You're going all out. Now, I'm not familiar with this from, I guess, Netflix, A Family Affair?
Yeah, and I always tell people, don't be confused about the sitcom of the 1960s with Brian Keith and Sebastian Cabot or the 70s song from Sly and the Family Stone. No, this has nothing to do with it. It's all about this young lady played by Joey King. She wants to move up in the movie business. And she's working for Zac Efron, who is an actor in the movie as well. But he's one of those, you know, who really likes himself. And so somehow or another, he winds up meeting Joey King's mother, played by Nicole Kidman. And next thing you know, they fall in love. So it's all about this whole thing, you know, can daughter accept mom dating her boss and, you know, a little bit of the age difference and all like that. But it's kind of like a nice rom-com, more like Hallmark.
It's on Netflix, and it's called A Family Affair. Let's listen.
This is madness, right?
Yeah, this is your mom and your boss. It's weird. After 2 years of being
his assistant,
I know him very well.
He's self-absorbed.
He's going to hurt her, and I will have to kill him.
See ya.
You're not Jack and Rose. Just get out of the car!
Well... That's complicated.
That's right. That's right. There are a lot of funny lines in this movie, and one in particular, the young lady is with Zac Efron's character in a supermarket, and he's kind of like looking around thinking, why doesn't anybody recognize me? And Rita was watching it with me going, that sounds familiar. And I'm going, wait, whoa, I'm not that kind of guy.
Wow. There's another film out where it's the older woman and the younger man. Have a relationship. I can't remember what it's called.
Huh.
But it's interesting that they're getting into these different kinds of relationships that happen in real life.
Right, right. Like you said, they're changing it around. It's no longer, right, you know, older man, younger woman.
Right.
Now they're mixing it all up, which is great. And, you know, hey, Nicole Kidman, she does a great job. She does a great
job.
And
maybe this is the film I'm thinking of.
Oh, could be.
I don't know. But I didn't remember that the guy was the daughter's boss. I don't know. I've only gotten my toes in the pond a little bit on these. They surprise me, and that's why we have you, Greg, because you make sense of it.
Oh, thank you.
What are you and Rita doing for the holiday?
We're just going to sit in the backyard next to the pond and do a little bit of barbecuing. How about you guys?
Yep, same thing. We got the cement pond, and the grill, and we've got Mama, Mama Kettle. Earlene here with us.
Great.
And we're just going to kind of take it easy. Kids will kind of come and go, I'm hoping. I think Jamie's probably tied up with golf. Right. Natalie is out there in New York with Simple Magazine. No, wait a minute. Oh. What is it called? How terrible of me. Real Simple? Oh. I'm not sure. You know
the
magazine.
I'm not sure. Mad's the only one I really think of. Magazine.
Which magazine?
Mad Magazine.
Okay.
That was one I learned to read off of.
I loved Mad Magazine.
No joke.
I loved it. There's no question about it. But Real Simple, I'm sure that's what it is. Meanwhile.
Yes.
Probably Sophie will be here. She's back from her study abroad.
Oh, great.
And Adam came over yesterday. So... you know how it is. Eventually, you see all the kids. You just don't see them all together unless you call for a family vacation and it intrigues them and catches their attention. Then they go, yeah, I want to do that.
Right, right.
I mean, people can relate. Anyway, thanks to you, Greg Russell, for the work you do all the time. We appreciate it. Worth seeing Despicable Me 4 at the theaters and A Family Affair on Netflix. And it was nice of you to bring the Chapmans around.
Absolutely.
So we can meet them, too.
Chapman, did you have a good time in there? They're all shaking and waving their hands. Yes. All right. Fantastic.
Okay.
Paul W., thank you so much.
Thank you, Greg. Best to you and Rita as we continue in Focus on WJR. Planning a trip to Mackinac Island this summer, maybe for this weekend, maybe for tomorrow, the 4th of July stone skipping with Eric the Voice Steiner. Well, there's only one way to start your adventure off right, and that's aboard Schepler's Ferry. The Schepler's crew welcomes you to experience first class. I do mean first class service offered every guest every day. Whether you're visiting Grand Hotel, Mission Point, or another island property, family-owned Schepler's Ferry departs every 15 minutes from St. Ignace and Mackinac City to get you there safely and quickly. Buy your tickets, check your departure and arrival times at sheplersferry.com. I'll welcome you aboard. I'm the voice of Schepler's Ferry on board, and I'd love to see you. Schepler's Ferry, first-class service every guest every day for over 75 years. Schepler's, S-H-E-P-L-E-R-S. Schepler's Ferry, 143 WJR. Well, it looks a little grayish, but it's going to be okay. We're going to have a great holiday week and weekend in remembering our Independence Day and celebrating it. And, yep, I'm going to get out on the grill, too. In fact, I got to go see Emmett and Gino and the whole Barada family over there at Fairway Packing. They call it the steak shop, but they've got the best steaks and the best hamburgers and hot dogs and all kinds of good stuff. And I just checked, they're open until 7 tonight there at Fairway on Mac. Fresh Farms, I know, will be open. That's another great little store that's close by. So you want to get out there if you can today and get everything you need for the weekend. That's my suggestion. And it is National Beef Month, and National Hamburger Day has come and gone. We mentioned it back in May. But we have an expert who I did not know existed. And the guys have found what is, in all intents and purposes, an Ivy League hamburger historian. Yale graduate and author of Hamburger Dreams, America's Love Affair with Grilling, and Why We Cook Out to Celebrate Our Summer Holidays, Chris Carosa. Hi, Chris. I'm Paul.
Hey, thanks for that introduction. I never heard that before.
Well, listen, I love grilling. I'm not very good in the kitchen, but I'm great in the backyard with a grill. I'm proud of my ability. It's not much, but I'm proud of my grilling ability, and I can't wait to talk to you as a grilling expert and a hamburger historian. Let's talk about the history. How did we get such a love affair with grilling, and for that matter, specifically grilling hamburgers at a time like this?
Well, I think if you really want to talk about outdoor cookouts, you have to go about 100 years BH. That's before the hamburger. It's right after the end of the Revolutionary War, and they start celebrating something called July 4th. So a couple of years after the end of the Revolutionary War, they have these big celebrations with cannons and fireworks, and of course you have to have a meal. And it's in the middle of summer, so you're going to cook outside, and you're going to have this thing called a barbecue. And the interesting thing about the barbecue is that it was the perfect type of event to have that really kind of dug into the British, because earlier in the 1700s, there was a book out from Britain that made fun of America's, the new countries, whatever, because of this thing called a barbecue. They had these considered a very low class sort of thing. So naturally, when America became its own country, the barbecue was saying, take that, Britain, we're going to cook the way we want to cook. So that became very popular. And in fact, by the time, say, Washington was president, when he referred to barbecue, he wasn't just talking about a way of cooking. He was actually talking about the event. And this became very traditional, very popular, really in the early 1800s. But what does it involve? It involves cooking a very large piece of meat, like a side of beef or something like that, that it's really tough to do if you're just having family over. So you need something that was smaller. And I think that when I'm skipping now ahead in the history of story, but when you think about families doing this in the 20th century, in the 1900s, they're not cooking sides of beef. They're also not barbecuing, by the way. They're grilling now, cooking over an open flame. And it's a lot easier if you have these things like hamburgers and hot dogs to do that. So how's that for a little bit of history?
Mike, it's way more than I ever would have guessed, and I've never thought of 100 years BH before the hamburger. So in the beginning, were hamburgers always on buns?
No. Interestingly enough, and we know this because there's actually newspaper stories that describe street vendors selling hamburgers and how they sold them. And what they did is they took loaves of bread and they cut it sort of like in a V-shaped thing, not in individual slices, but more like a pita. So it's one connected piece of bread, and they put the hamburger in the middle of that V-shaped piece of bread. And that's how they served it. So, and you'd see, they actually have illustrations of this from, I think, 1895, where a man is walking away from the food truck carrying this hamburger with his hand underneath the V part of it. Think of it, just like I said, eating a pita or something like that.
Yeah, that's wild. Well, I'm going to ask you this. I'm of the school that for a hamburger or a steak, you don't keep flipping them back and forth and back and forth. When I see people do that, in my mind, I think they're getting rid of all the beautiful juices that you want to stay in the hamburger or in the steak. So do you flip them several times or just once?
I flip them a couple of times. Yes, I do. But I also try to keep the juice in there. There's different ways of doing that, by maybe charring them first on top so it looks almost like they're burned, but they're not.
Right.
You know, you could put some sort of water or something on it. My son has actually perfected steak where he cooks it by putting it in butter, and the butter, it's not just butter, it's some sort of thing, crust that puts it on top of the steak so that all the juices stay in. Mm. And he also doesn't flip it over that often either.
Well,
so everybody has their
same,
like, their different way of doing it. I'll tell you, when they made the first hamburger, they actually didn't know how to make it because they were used to making pork sausage sandwiches, and it cooks a little bit differently. With the first hamburger, they cooked it, and it looked like it was done, but when they opened it up on the inside, it was still raw. So in order to make it cook on the inside, they cooked it for longer, and they ended up discovering they didn't make the first hamburger. They made the first hockey puck. That's how bad it was. So they added coffee and some, you know, in it to steam the inside. So that worked, but it tasted yucky. So on top of the coffee, they put brown sugar and a bunch of other stuff. And it was really a mixed concoction of things that ended up tasting pretty good. And believe it or not, the original family still has that recipe.
Wow.
And they use it in their restaurant. So you can actually taste the original hamburger if you want to.
You could try the original hamburger and figure it out. But I'm with your son. I don't flip it too much. I do char it a little bit, so I guess that counts as a flip. And butter. I mean, what doesn't taste better with butter on it? Meanwhile, I love the idea of the book. When you went to Yale, you certainly weren't aiming to become the world's foremost hamburger historian and backyard grill master, I wouldn't think.
No, I actually majored in physics and astronomy. But I took this class as a, you know, as a, just a kind of a joke, not really a joke. I was sort of interested in it, called The Study of the City. And in the process of that, you didn't have a final test. You had to write a paper on the biography of the city you were born in. And I was born in Buffalo, New York. And as I was doing my research, that's where I found out the first time that the hamburger was invented, right outside of Buffalo. And I was so excited, I ran down and talked to one of my classmates. Hey, guess what? The hamburger was invented in Buffalo. And he said, no, it wasn't. It was invented right here in New Haven. And then he promptly took me to Louis' Lunch, which still exists, and I had their hamburger, which is one of the origin stories. And that was my first taste, no pun intended, of this controversy of where the hamburger was first born. And I just decided, you know, hey, let's actually look into this, do the research, and see what I could find out. And I treated it almost like a cold case, a criminal cold case, trying to find all the evidence that I could find of these various stories. And I think that I came up with the answer.
I think you came up with a good one. Chris Carosa, MBA, Yale graduate, award-winning writer, and author of Hamburger Dreams, America's Love Affair with Grilling and Why We Cook Out to Celebrate Our Summer Holidays. Thanks for this. We're going to look for that book, and we're going to have a great week, and I hope you will, too, for this holiday weekend. We appreciate it. We're out of time. We got to go. I wanted to say hi to Marie. She's coming up next. The whole team, Brian Morton, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, have a great 4th of July. Regards, Paul W. Smith.